Chapter 19 Weapon Master. With Braylon and Jarel Fay close behind, and another half-dozen Brigandeerth warriors following in the shadows, Zachnefane led his team through the tunnels of the Upper Underdark, using every skill he had worked so hard to perfect. It had been nearly 2 centuries since he had done this, but by Zachnefane's internal clock, only a very short time had elapsed. These were not distant memories to him. He felt more as if he had been transported forward in time than that he had been absent from this place for decades. He moved to one corner, 3 passages looming ahead, and closed his eyes, visualizing the model Jarlaxle had constructed back in Luskan before sending him forth. He reflexively put his hand on the folded map he now carried in his pocket, only to pull it away. He had done his preparations and knew the way. He didn't need the map. He signaled to his team to follow at length, then slipped across the entrances of the 2 nearest tunnels to the 3rd, which would take him to the south along the coast, not far from the sewers of Waterdeep. He sensed movement up ahead and fell into a crouch along the side of the natural tunnel, blending in seamlessly with the jags in the stone. Up ahead, he saw a lifted arm, just that, fingers waggling in the silent drow code. Zachnefane stood up and brushed himself off, and the newcomer approached. "Valisune, I presume," the weapon master stated. He lifted his hand to signal his band to remain back in the shadows. "Well met, Zachnefane," the rogue replied. "Jarlaxle informed you that we would meet at this place?" "Somewhere around here, though I am not familiar with these tunnels," Zachnefane replied, not wanting to tip his hand here, particularly given the last name of this drow. "You are on the correct path, and before the day is through you will come to a region where the natural corridors intersect with worked stone," Valisune explained. "These are the Waterdeep sewers, and in this area you will find the Hunsrin merchants." "One does not find a drow," Zachnefane said, remembering another place and another time, and an answer to a question posed. He spent a moment thinking of that adventure, then looked back to see Valisune eyeing him curiously. "It does not matter," Zachnefane said. "Just an old joke." The rogue didn't blink. "Do you have something for me?" Zachnefane asked. Valisune nodded and slid a pack from his shoulder. From inside he produced a small crystalline globe, one that fit neatly into the palm of his hand. Zachnefane peered closer at the object, noting what looked like tiny stars floating and darting within the globe. Valisune handed it to him. "The command is Rumblebelly for some reason," the rogue explained as soon as he was no longer holding the item. "But do not invoke the magic until you are ready to fully use it. The item is charged, and each recharge is quite expensive." "Is that not the nickname of my son's halfling friend?" Zachnefane asked. "Is it? Well then, perhaps the word is appropriate." Recalling again that long-ago incident, Zachnefane smiled. "I am told by Jarlaxle that you knew my grandfather," Valisune said. Zachnefane stared at him hard. "I did?" "Then perhaps one day soon we will share drinks in One-Eyed Jack's, and you can tell me all about him." "Better to not have that conversation over potent drinks." Now it was Valisune's turn to stare. "But you knew Arathisune?" "I knew him better than he knew I knew him," Zachnefane replied evenly. His face and voice stayed in serious. "And so he was surprised that I was not surprised when he crept up behind me with a bared dagger." Valisune fell back a step, his hand reflexively going to his belt. "He was of Brigandeerth," the rogue said. "So are you," Zachnefane said, a warning, since he was then staring at Valisune's sword hand. "I would still have you tell me about him," Valisune said, relaxing. "I didn't much like him. So I gather. Still, perhaps your tales will allow me to walk better around Zachnefane." "One that does not approach from behind is always preferred." The two locked stares for a long, intense while. Then Valisune took another step away and dropped a bow. "Until we meet in Luskan, then," he said. "You are not joining my adventure?" Zachnefane asked. "I will be about." "Ah, Jarlaxle has told you to hold back and watch, to report back to him in case I and my party are destroyed." Valisune shrugged. "The Hunsrins are formidable, and know the region very well. I doubt you'll even find them. I won't, Zaknafane replied. After all, how does one find a drow? Once again, the reference was lost on Valisyun, and he just shrugged, took one last look at Zaknafane, and, in the blink of an eye, was gone. Zaknafane measured the skill of the retreat, of how easily and completely, perhaps even magically, Valisyun had disappeared from sight. It seemed so very familiar to him. He had seen such skill before. He hoped that this particular point of history wouldn't repeat. "You are certain of this?" Escavidney asked for the third time. She was in the summoning chamber of House Malarn, alone with Matron Jindia and in her drow form. "I have prayed," Matron Jindia Malarn calmly replied. "You ask for much, the price will be high." "The reward will be the outcome," Matron Jindia said. "More than worth the effort to you. The goddess will know of your contribution." "You assume that such a reward is desired?" "I am devoted to Lady Loth, and only to Lady Loth. I have prayed." "I have not told you the Spider Queen's desires," Escavidney reminded her. "Then you would not like a bit of the credit?" Matron Jindia asked slyly. "That is not for you to know," the handmaiden replied with equal aplomb. "Lady Loth will know of my actions, should I grant you that which you now beg." "Of course she will. One cannot move such powerful toys about without notice." "You will ask her permission?" "I do not need her permission," Escavidney said. "Nor do you, nor would it be denied or granted if you asked. The webs of chaos are not to be sorted for you by the Spider Queen. They are for you to decipher, rightly or wrongly, and take the blessing if rightly, and the consequence if wrongly. It wouldn't be any fun otherwise, would it?" Matron Jindia closed her eyes and folded her arms comfortably over her chest, confident and at ease. "The webs of Driz Doerden," she said. "The War of the Silver Marches, the demons in the streets of Menzo Baranzon, the destruction of Demogorgon at the gates of Menzo Baranzon, the fall of Cusor Lara into the dwarven friends of Drizzt, and with the help of Drizzt, of course, always Drizzt. So many webs, and I have now found a strand to weave one of my own, and it is a good one, handmaiden, one that will at last finish the tale of the heretic." "So you hope," Escavidney said with a coy chuckle. Matron Jindia cast a stern look at the Yoklo. "Hope implies doubt. I do not doubt. I have prayed. I have learned. I believe." Escavidney nodded. "And so you assume all the responsibility." Matron Jindia smiled. "I will grant your request, matron," the handmaiden said. "I will deliver the diabolical toys to you, and forthwith. I hope that they will serve you well, and if they do not, if your web is not one of Loth's desires, I will enjoy watching these gifts turn upon you, do not doubt." "I have prayed," Matron Jindia replied, smiling. "You don't, Valisyun. You don't find a drow," Zaknafane whispered under his breath, soon after he had parted ways with the rogue. He set the magical globe down on the floor. He feared it would roll away, for the natural stone surface was not level. But as he let go of it, the item didn't shift at all. It took Zaknafane a long while to trust in that stability, but eventually he moved his hands back, knelt before the globe, and commanded it, "Rumblebelly." The floating bits of light in the globe began to swirl and spin and coalesce, emanating an outward glow. Fearful of being revealed out in the open, Zaknafane moved away, scrambling over a couple of stones to exit the shallow alcove he had chosen for his trap. When he looked back, his jaw slid open, for the magical globe was projecting images now. The item itself appeared to be gone, buried under a small cooking fire. And around that fire sat a handful of halflings, looking very much like the band Jarlaxle, Zaknafane, and Arathis Hune had used to lure Shiva's Alvir. "You let the drow find you." Zaknafane motioned to his two nearest companions, Braylon John Kay and Agalavan Zalvir, that latter of which had been on the other end of this trap those centuries before, and had since served well in the ranks of Bregan D'Earth. The three moved off into the shadows and waited, and Zaknafane wished that he also had Jarlaxle's portable hole along. He had chosen this place carefully, every tunnel, every possible approach, was now being watched by a pair of Brigandier scouts, and the whole spiderweb of tunnels within those scouting positions was interconnected. Thus, word could be relayed to all of the party in short order. Now they just had to wait. Not always the easiest of tasks. The day passed, and another, and a third after that. They had visitors. A mischief of giant rats, a cloud of bats, three different carrion crawlers, even a displacer beast. But none took interest in the scene of encamped halflings, and they were easily turned aside by the skilled drow. Zacnaphane had no idea how long the magic of the globe would last, but it hadn't dimmed, and thus they went into the fourth day, sitting and waiting and watching. That day they were at last rewarded, as signals passed along the line that a drow troop, including at least three priestesses, was approaching from the south. Zacnaphane, nearest the illusion, crouched, with Braylon and Igalavin behind him, none with weapons in hand, though all had hands near those blades and crossbows and such. Zacnaphane even gripped the handle of the whip on his right hip more than once, while his free left hand signaled a reminder to his two companions that this was a mission of parley. Still, one could never be too careful when dealing with priestesses, particularly high priestesses. No drow woman ever gained such a title because she was honest and kind. With startling ferocity, the area before the three exploded in movement as a band of a half-dozen net-carrying bugbears appeared as if out of nowhere and charged the halfling camp. So great was the illusion that the tall and hairy beasts didn't detect it as they came right upon the camp, throwing their nets wide and leaping at the halfling images with clubs in hand. "Halt!" Zacnaphane commanded, leaping from concealment, right hand pulling forth the whip, left grabbing the hilt of his sword, sheathed diagonally down his back from behind his left shoulder. He didn't draw the sword as he approached, though. Not yet. The bugbears swung about, roaring in protest. "Halt!" Zacnaphane ordered again, aiming the command particularly at the closest one. But the fool charged at him, hoisting a huge club over its head in both hands, a weapon with such long reach that it could crush him before he was close enough for a sword strike. Zacnaphane, however, had a longer weapon still. He cracked the whip with blinding speed and accuracy, bringing it above the seven-foot-tall creature's head to wrap about and entangle the lifted arms, with the tip coming back around to snap right in the bugbear's face. Zacnaphane didn't call upon the plane-ripping power of the item, not against a mere bugbear, but it wasn't necessary anyway. The creature stumbled and tugged, and stumbled off balance when the whip fell slack. One long stride let it set its feet firmly, though, and it brought its tangled arms down and pulled them wide, looking up only then to see if it could rip apart the ambusher. But the ambusher wasn't there. No, Zacnaphane had moved simultaneously with that awkward bugbear stride, out of the creature's field of vision, and at the same instant the bugbear began to turn. Feeling the whip tugging it from behind, Zacnaphane's fine sword slid into its back, severing its spine with ease. And Zacnaphane, completely balanced, yanked the whip hard. As the bugbear started to fall forward, and with just the right angle and leverage to send the monster spinning, freeing his whip, which then went out immediately behind him, cracking once and again. He caught two other bugbears in the face with just the barest adjustment of his wrist, stopping them both in their tracks. "What is the meaning of this?" a female voice yelled, and into the chamber came a host of Hunsrin drow, a high priestess flanked by two other clerics, and a handful of drow men behind them. But from every tunnel approach came more drow. Zacnaphane's band, hand crossbows leveled, and behind Zacnaphane came more, Braylon, Igalavin, and a third, Valisyun, who appeared as if out of nowhere. "Jari Hunsrin," Valisyun yelled over Zacnaphane's attempted response. The high priestess held back her charges and stared at the rogue, who stood with no weapons in hand, a disarming smile on his face. "We are not here to do battle," Valisyun assured her. "You know me, high priestess, and know who I represent." Zacnaphane glanced back at the rogue only briefly, his expression conveying that he was less than amused. He knew he should have been glad for the intervention, but before him stood three priestesses. Couldn't he dispatch them and get the needed information from the remaining men? "Yet battle was done, I see," Jari Hunsrin replied, motioning to the downed bugbear. "Goblinkin," Zacnaphane said, and spat on the corpse. "Silence, houseless wretch," Jerry Hansren scolded. Turning back to Valis Yoon, she said, "Explain, and quickly, else I will punish this one severely instead of taking coin to pay for the dead slave." "Coin," Zaknafane echoed with a snort. From her hip, the High Priestess produced a whip of her own, one with three living serpents, writhing and coiling, eager to strike. "Don't kill him, I beg," said Valis Yoon. "He is inexperienced and a bit of a fool, but he shows promise." Zaknafane sighed and glanced back at the rogue once more. "He could use a lesson, though, if you feel it necessary," Valis Yoon then added, to the shock of everyone listening. Jerry Hunsrin howled and lifted her deadly scourge, but Zaknafane had caught on to Valis Yoon's plan. More important, he was quicker than the priestess, so much quicker than she could have ever anticipated, and his whip shot across suddenly, cracking right across the writhing serpents of Chari's scourge. And this time the weapon master did cut a line through the fabric of the multiverse to set loose the elemental plane of fire, a sizzling and angry white-hot rift that conflagrated the serpents immediately, giving Chari a writhing three-headed torch. Everyone in the room gasped, except for Zaknafane and Valis Yoon. And while Zaknafane used the distraction to leap forward into a roll, Valis Yoon merely laughed. The High Priestess tried to respond with her scourge, but the serpents were quite dead already, just three flaking, smoking, limp cords that offered no bite at all. Out of the roll, Zaknafane came up with a sword tip planted firmly against Jari Hunsrin's neck. He stared at her with eyes that promised murder. "How many wards have you enacted, Priestess?" he asked, and his red eyes sparkled. "Jarlaxle gave me this sword and promised me that no magical barriers would stop its bite. Would you like to learn the truth of his boast?" Zaknafane kept his expression quite steady here, with just a hint of eagerness evident to strengthen his bluff, for Jarlaxle had told him no such thing, and while this sword was indeed quite fine, there was no such enchantment upon it. "Enough, enough," Valis Yoon demanded, coming forward and waving his arms at all of the potential combatants. "We have come only for information."
"And we'll pay for it,"
Jari Hunsrin dared to snap back at him. "I can make a better deal with the women flanking you," Zaknafane warned. "Call off your dog," Chari said to Valis Yoon. "You haven't figured it out yet?" the rogue replied. The priestess eyed Valis Yoon curiously for just a moment, then turned back, and the blood drained from Chari Hunsrin's face when she truly noted Zaknafane. When she looked at him as not just another male, when she, at last, came to understand the true identity of the murderer crouched before her. She swallowed hard. Zaknafane felt his sword tip shift with the movement of her throat, and that brought him great satisfaction.
"I am no enemy to Jarlaxle and Bregan D'Earth," she said.
It occurred to Zaknafane that this was the first time in his life that he had a drawn blade in range of a priestess of Lolth, other than Matron Simfrey and Matron Malisto Erden, and had not struck. His grin reflected that as he withdrew the blade just a bit.
"What do you want?"
High Priestess Jari Hunsrin asked, aiming her stare and words at Valis Yoon. "Information, that is all," the rogue answered.
"You will pay for it,"
Jari demanded again, apparently recovering her nerve. "And pay for my scourge." Zaknafane lifted an eyebrow, and with that little gesture conveyed quite clearly that he would happily spring upon the impertinent witch and murder her most horribly just for continually bringing up payment when she had no leverage. "Of course we will," said Valis Yoon from behind him. And when the jingle of coins sounded, Zaknafane rolled his eyes at how quickly the other drow gave in. Valis Yoon came forward with a heavy sack. When he let it fall to the ground, some of the contents, gold coins, spilled out. "Jarlaxle is always fair, High Priestess," Valis Yoon said with a bow. "Ever has he valued the friendship of House Hunsrin above almost every other house." Then tipping his hand, regarding the information, he added, "I would have brought gems and jewels, but it seems that House Hunsrin is flush with those at this time."
"Not so much,"
Jari Hunsrin replied. She glared at Zaknafane. "Put that blade away." He did, but made a show of it, just so it was clear how close to death she was at his hands. And as he stepped back, he couldn't help but feel quite unsatisfied. But this was business, Jarlaxle's business, and Zaknafane knew his place.
You are disappointed because you did not get to murder a priestess, Jarlaxle observed when Zacnaphane walked into his room at 12 Hands. The weapon master snorted but didn't otherwise answer, recognizing that this was Jarlaxle's roundabout way of letting him know that he had already heard some reports of the meeting, though his party had come straight back here with all speed. The Hunsrans know House Margaster, he explained to the mercenary leader. They have bought many gemstones from High Priestess Chari and her agents. Dozens, including at least one major gemstone, perhaps more. Phylacteries, you mean, and major demons. Zacnaphane shrugged, conceding that Jarlaxle knew much more about this than he did. When Matron Mother Bayenri invited demons into Menzo Baranzon, when the Fares Rest barrier between the Underdark and the lower plains had thinned, the streets of the city teemed with those foul denizens. Why would she do that? Zacnaphane asked. Quenthal believed that it harkened back to a glorious time of Menzo Baranzon's past, Jarlaxle explained. And also it allowed her to strengthen her grip upon the city. The constant threat of uncontrolled demons brought several houses closer to her side. It was a brilliant plan to hold power tighter, even if many of our kin suffered for it. Nothing strengthens a queen more than an outside threat, even if she's the one who introduced it, I guess, Zacnaphane said, shaking his head. Preservation of the tribe trumps all, Jarlaxle agreed. There is also the not-so-little matter that many of the matrons and their high priestesses figured out that there was value in capturing those demons. To put them into phylacteries that the Hunsrans could sell on the surface world to unsuspecting Iblith, Zacnaphane reasoned. He shook his head at the diabolical planning. It was indeed so very drow. Zacnaphane's face went very serious then, however, and he stared hard at Jarlaxle. And Bregan D'Earth? What about us? Have we engaged in such trade? No, Jarlaxle answered without the slightest hesitation. No, never. These phylacteries are poison. They will entrap the innocent and spread death, perhaps uncontrollably. But the prophet, Zacnaphane said teasingly. Jarlaxle wouldn't take the bait and shook his head resolutely. Zacnaphane nodded, glad of that, because there were moral lines he would not cross, an axe that he knew his son simply would not tolerate, even from someone Drizzt called a friend. He started to explain his relief, but didn't get the first word out of his mouth before he realized the look of horror on Jarlaxle's face. What is it? Zacnaphane asked. Dwarves, Jarlaxle replied, looking past Zacnaphane, off into the distance, as if he were sorting through something. This clan's Stoneshaft? No, said Jarlaxle. In the Bloodstone Lands, the Hunsrans sold gems to dwarves. Except there weren't dwarves at all, but strange creatures posing as dwarves were not in their usual giant form. Spriggans, Zacnaphane said, and Jarlaxle nodded. Do you think Clan Stoneshaft to be Spriggans? Jarlaxle shook his head. It doesn't matter. I was just reminded that Chari Hunsrin had dealt with dwarves before. She has been selling her wares to this House Margaster, so she admitted, Zacnaphane replied. She knows their nobles and has dealt with them directly, if discreetly. But House Margaster is intimately tied to Clan Stoneshaft. How do you know? Because they use those dwarves to wash their platinum and gold from the eyes of the other Waterdavian noble families. It was Margaster Gold that bought Thornhold from Lord Neverember, and those dwarves, Clan Stoneshaft, who appeared at Neverember's court with the ill-gotten coin, were well adorned with shiny baubles, according to Regis. Your agents, Zacnaphane murmured, the mercenary's concern finally dawning on him. Athrogate and Ambergris, said Jarlaxle. Into what hell did I send them? He rushed out the door, Zacnaphane close behind, and didn't stop running until he arrived at the house of Donala and Regis, where they found the governing couple enjoying their dinner. I've little time to explain, Jarlaxle replied to their questioning stares and Donala's actual question. The dwarves you saw in Neverwinter City, he said to Regis, who nodded. Jewelry, baubles, Jarlaxle asked.
In abundance, Regis confirmed. Quite gaudy, I thought.
Like the Queen of Damara? Regis dropped a food-laden fork, something that never happened. because he had been there. He had watched the whole thing. He had been lucky to get out of the Bloodstone Lands alive when Queen Concertina del Cassio Frostmantle had been possessed by the succubus.
"Gods, what does this mean?" Dinala demanded.
"It means that for your sake, for my sake, for the sake of King Brunner and everything we care about, you and your network now work for me." Dinala's expression grew suspicious at that, but Regis stood up, looked to his wife, and nodded his agreement.